Hi, you are listening to Record of Change. My name is Matthias and I'm your host for this episode. Record of Change features the stories of individuals from across the world about how their lives are being shaped by the COVID-19 pandemic. We listen to our interviewees at several points in time because we want to follow the stories of how their lives are changing. This is episode 5 of our third season. In this season, we will feature a mixture of some new and familiar voices and stories. Today, I'm speaking to Blanca, who lives in Quito, the capital of Ecuador. Blanca and I met in 2007 when she was hosting me as a couch surfer and I was crashing the sofa in her parents' living room in the nation's second big city, Guayaquil. We hadn't talked for many years, but after reading shocking news regarding Corona in her hometown, I was eager to reconnect. Blanca is a science teacher for youngsters of up to 15 years, a mother of a 5-year-old, and considers herself an unpaid ambassador of her nation. In this episode, Blanca will share with us how she as a mother and as a teacher has been coping with the pandemic so far. Not only had she been teaching from home for almost a year now, but also had the virus affected many of her loved ones. Let's listen to her.
My name is Blanca. I live in Quito, but I'm from Guayaquil, Ecuador, in South America. I'm a teacher right now. I'm an online virtual teacher. I teach science. I mean, I'm an English teacher, but we use this methodology where we use science as a tool to learn English. So I'm a science teacher in middle school, and I'm married. I actually have a little boy. His name is Isaac. He's 5 years old. We are about to get to 1 year of being home. Schools are not open. Many people are still working as me virtually. My husband goes to work two or three times per week. He goes to his office, but in a very short, limited time. And in general, things in Ecuador have been really crazy with all this. I mean, just as in the rest of the world, but we've had lots of things going on here with the corruption cases, you know, like related to the pandemic. So it's pretty sad. Imagine right now the vaccine just got here, so we still have all this corruption stuff going on. It's terrible. But we have, I mean, at least, you know, in the teaching field, we always have a hope that one of those kids that we educate will make the change.
Can you tell us what is the so far history of Corona in Ecuador and what is the current situation in short?
I'm going to tell you from my point of view or probably Please. From my own experience. So I'm from Guayaquil, but I live in Quito. Quito is the capital of Ecuador. Since we are different regions, Guayaquil is in the coast and Quito is in the highlands. There have been for many years like this kind of regionalism. People in the coast, we talk differently, right? We open our mouths, or we talk with our arms and everything. And people in the highlands are more conservative. They actually speak slowly. They even have a better accent, let's say this way, in Spanish, right? And yeah, so the coronavirus was an exception. So what happened here? As we are different regions, we also have different school schedules. At that time, it was vacation time. So many people that has had the possibility to travel, they traveled to Europe, they traveled to the United States, they traveled to Canada, to China. They traveled to many places. Lots of people came back, left on February, and they were coming back or going on March. And that was in the coast. But in the highlands, we were in classes. But in the coast, what happened is like people say, oh, too bad, I already have my trip settled, so I'm going off. And lots of people went away and then couldn't come back. Like a cousin of mine, she was stuck in Orlando for 6 months.
Wow.
And she had this attitude, right? She's like, oh yes, but I already paid my trip. I'm not canceling it. And what happened, it was in Guayaquil, they had the first case like one day. They call it the patient zero. So this patient zero appeared from at the beginning of March. And all of a sudden they had like 100 of cases, just like that. And March the 15th here, we went home and we just didn't get out again for 6 months. And then all of a sudden you know, it was very crazy. Like my family, I remember this, and I'm going to tell you this from the beginning. So we received in the school, like at 12 o'clock, they tell us, listen, just take everything with you, all the books, everything, and all that. And at the same time, on WhatsApp, my family, like they were all at the beach. They were having so much fun. They didn't even watch, TV news. And then at night, that same day, they were like, oh, I think we have to come back to Guayaquil, otherwise we will be stuck here. And that's what they did. So while they were riding the banana at the beach, I was like running like chicken without a head in my school, trying to get all the kids, you know, ready for this moment. So that's how it started, March the 15th of 2020. I won't ever forget it. Yeah. Then in Ecuador in general, it was kind of terrible because nobody never expected a pandemic, right? So in Guayaquil, people start dying in their houses, and you had your family member dead body in your house for like a week.
Wow.
So what people started doing is they were started burying them on the streets. My mom and my sisters, they said that all the city smelled like trash, but like burned trash. And, you know, like lots of flies and all the, you know, all the animals that can come with all that in 34 degrees Celsius. So that was terrible. That was kind of like, you know, and everybody had somebody that died. Everybody, like in my family too, like, of course, there were people that were elderly people, right? You know how here in Ecuador, we still live with our grandparents until they die. So it was something very sad. Many people that had diabetes that were very young die. Diabetes is one of the number one reasons why people die in Ecuador. So lots of young people died of that. And my sister, she's a nutritionist in a hospital. So she was the first one that got contagious in the family. And she was isolated. And, you know, my family in general, most of us had the COVID, but, you know, it's not in the proportions that we would expect, right? Thank God it was like that. And I have friends in the Amazon. My friend, she was my roommate, Tefi, she's from Gualaquiza, which is in the middle of the Amazon. And she said that they are curing that with only like plants. And they have a pretty low rate, yes, of disease, which is really good. And I have to say this because most people in Ecuador use natural medicine. It's most common. I mean, I don't know how you say in English eucalipto, but eucalipto, people were selling eucalipto leaves in the street. Like right now, my house smells like eucalipto. You have eucalipto everywhere.
Is eucalyptus, probably?
Probably will be, right? Yeah. I just don't remember right now.
I mean, I read this one story on the news sometime 10 months ago about Guayaquil, like people having dead bodies in the street. And I was, of course, thinking of you and your family. Wow. So, I'm surprised, but this is also how I remember you, that you tell me stories full of grief with a big smile on your face.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's a way how, and I have to, like my son, he's been asking me about it. He's 5 years old, right? So he's like, what is the soul? I wanna know what's the soul. I mean, and I have to explain him, right? Because I think it's more of our way of seeing life. And probably as family, maybe as community or as a culture way to see life. And death is part of the life. And I was explaining to him that because it's like, so what's the soul? The soul, it's the essence of you. If you wouldn't have a soul, it's just like a computer. It's just like nothing here. It's just like, you know, like the wall. And I was telling him that, and he's like, so my grandma, because she just passed away maybe 6 months ago, he's like, so her soul is still alive, because we do believe that, as Christians, believers, we think that our soul is resting, but it's going to come up to the Creator one day. So it's this experience, and the same thing happened with my students. We talk a lot about this. Every week we have somebody that is losing somebody, and not only by COVID. It's just this post effects. Yeah. I mean, it's secondary effects of the COVID. And we talk a lot about it. So, yes, and as science teachers, we always talk about astronauts. I mean, it's kind of like what do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, we all want to be astronauts. Yeah. And it's something that we just dream a lot. We talk about. So, but we were looking at this documentary. It wasn't very long, but it was like an interview of a Spanish astronaut, and he was talking about, you know, like all the hard training that they have. 6 months here, 6 months in the International Station, and then when they are there, there's no like night or day. And we were comparing the astronaut life to what we're living right now. And it was pretty cool because we're like, well, if we want to be astronauts, this is kind of like part of our training. We need to be ready, you know, at all times. We have to deal with this feeling of missing people, of wanting to hug people. But that means that we have to tell them that we love them every time we get the chance. And it was pretty cool. But I think in school, like kids right now are more sensible and about these topics, which is great, because I believe sensible people will take the best decisions whenever they get the chance to. So I see the pandemic as an opportunity.
And how do people around you perceive this? Do they also perceive it as an opportunity? Because here, I mean, you know, being in Germany, I would say majority of people just see this as a huge obstacle that they want to get over, and everyone is saying, let's go back to normal because we want to travel. You know, Germany is such a privileged country or a society where people just miss all the privileges of, you know, traveling around, shopping, meeting friends, and spending money, consume, you know. How do you perceive people around you? Do people also see this as an opportunity?
I think in Ecuador, people are, in general, they, of course, they see it as an obstacle, but most of the people that I know, and not only from my circle, but are looking, I mean, if you were an engineer last year, you lost your job, right now you're selling fruits. If you were, you know, like environmental whatever, and you were earning lots of money, right now you're just doing, you know, pastry and bakery, and that's what it gives you, it's helping you, and that's what I see a lot, like in my social networks. Most of my social networks are about small businesses that just came out right now. I don't want to romanticize the unemployment in Ecuador, the situation, because this is like a state responsibility. But people in general, they actually are eating somehow. And right now, well, I've been thinking a lot about in our community, we can actually get some, you know, like start cultivating our own food. And I think this is what is it about. This is the opportunity that I believe it's working. Like my dad, he has worked in agriculture for many years, like 30, 40 years. Right now, he's so excited to help people. So he goes and brings food, and he has lots of people that are helping him. Of course, they take food from plantain, that it's what our property produces the most. That before they actually got waste because nobody could go, and you know, it's just so much work that nobody did anything. But now he's so happy to, you know, like, okay, this is going to help somebody to eat. And I think this is the opportunity that as a society we're seeing. That's why many people are not under depression. I think the fact of living in a country with only two seasons, you know, hot and hotter. I told you about the seasons. Yeah, we have two seasons, hot and hotter. It makes us a little bit comfortable of just, you know, we have the food we eat. Let's not fight for any other thing.
I want to come back to the COVID situation at the moment in Ecuador. Actually, two questions. One is, you just said the first vaccinations arrived. So what is the strategy? Who's getting it first? And the second question, maybe it's even related. I just read, if I'm not mistaken, that there are going to be elections sometime soon?
In 2 weeks, yes.
Okay.
Well, so it's this is another sad story that I'm going to laugh about, because it's like, I don't want to cry, so I'm going to laugh. So this is what is happening. The vaccine just got here a week ago. They said, of course, the authorities, they said the first who are going to get this, it's the people that are working the first line, which are the doctors and all the people that are working in the hospitals. So, okay. So the vaccine just got last Thursday. And on Friday, the first one is the Ministry of Health getting his shot. He's saying, oh, well, I have to demonstrate that I do believe in the vaccine, because in a country like Ecuador, where nobody believes in the politicians nor in the vaccines, people were like, okay, but he's not working in the hospital. Why he's using one of the vaccines that are supposed to be from someone that should. But then 2 or 3 days after that, all the politicians, all the assemblyistic people in the, you know, like, were getting their shots. So the doctors and nurses in the hospital started a strike. So in Guayaquil, all the administrative people from the hospitals that were politicians got the shot. In Cuenca, the same thing. And in Quito, listen, because Quito is the capital and here's where the Ministry of Health lives. He sent like shots to where his mom lives. She lives in a elderly people home, in a nurse home. So I know, and he's like, oh, because they're vulnerable. Oh, by the way, my mom lives there.
And then is this affecting the elections? Is it part of the debate?
Of course, for the government party, that it's there. Yes, for them. But I don't know if you know, but we have 16 candidates. I'm not talking about 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm talking about 16. 16. I don't even know them all. I don't even know. Okay, some of them are just like, what? Where did you come from? It's like, in general, I think right now, anything can happen. You have 16 candidates. We are going to a second round, and usually, yes, like here we don't, people in Ecuador don't believe anymore those ideals about, you know, like left and like the left and the right, we call it, right? And at this point, nobody cares. The results of the surveys that they have until now is like, you have the two options, the crazy socialist. And then you have the banker, the crazy banker. Those are the two options that are coming. And so it's terrible what's coming on. Seriously. Yes.
I think another big party in Ecuador is the church. So I'm wondering if my assumption is right. What is the role here in the communities, in the Christian communities?
Well, in general, the church have played a huge role. Every single church, I'm talking about the Catholic Church, the Christian church, the Protestant, the Jehovah's Witnesses, all the churches have worked as a community, as itself. But I'm going to talk about my uncle. He lived in New York for many years, but he came last year to live here in Ecuador. He just got COVID, I think, on December, at the beginning of December. The Jehovah's Witness community have organized themselves into different districts. And he had the doctors coming to his house from the, like, volunteering doctors. So they actually, they organize themselves, they send the doctors that they needed. And only when the doctor say he needs to go to the hospital, he went to a hospital where a Jehovah's Witness doctor was actually helping him there. Then in June, we had an accident with my mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. She just fell and she hit her head really bad. And we tried to get her in the hospital because she was 70, 75 or something. And there was no room. I mean, there was no space available for anyone in the hospital. Mm. And when she actually got taken care of, it was too late. And she passed away 2 days after that. I mean, it's like kind of like the post effects of having all this COVID. And then what happened with the other people? Lots of people with cancer died. Lots of people with AIDS died because they didn't have the attention that they needed at the moment they needed. Yeah. And then I know the Catholic Church in Quito, there is a lot of emotional support for the people, for the grief of many people. Like for us, they were the only ones helping my husband to get over this. So I think churches, not only one church, churches in general are probably the only authority that we have left that many people see it as mediators of this crisis, this political, eternal political crisis that we live in.
So let me change the topic. Let's not talk about politics anymore. You caught COVID 2 weeks ago, or you've got the diagnosis 2 weeks ago. Any idea where you got it from, and how was it for you to get the positive result?
Well, I went to Guayaquil on Christmas, so and I actually traveled by bus, and I really wanted to see my family. So that feeling of going to Guayaquil actually got me crazy, and probably it was on the trip. But I was with my husband and with my son. My son, at the beginning, he had a little symptoms, but they both are negative.
And how was it for you to have the positive result?
Well, I had two negative first.
Okay.
I was feeling like, oh my God, something is going on in my head. It was kind of like really, you know, like I was very dizzy. And I was really, really tired. You know, like here in Quito, we are 1,800 meters above the sea level. So I was having the same feeling that I had when I just came to live in Quito. I need more oxygen to breathe when I got the result that it was positive. I just went to bed like, I'm dying. And it's been weird, but I feel the support, you know, like the students, my family, my friends. That it's awesome that having somebody that is always asking you, how are you feeling today?
Yeah.
Are you improving?
And did you try to keep distant to your husband and your son?
I tried. I'm in another room, but it's still, we live in the same house. We only have one bathroom. You know, my son, for example, in the morning, he's like, I just want to give you a hug. And I'm like, okay, go get your mask. Now go wash your hands. We really hug each other.
And what's the protocol now? I mean, it's been 13 days, so tomorrow's going to be 2 weeks. You can just release your quarantine, or do you have to take another test?
No, tomorrow I do have to go another test. And this is the protocol. So once, after 15 days, if you didn't actually have, you know, like another need, special need to go to the hospital, you just need to go and take the next test.
You talked very, very enthusiastically about your job. When do you expect to be back to your kids?
We're still talking every day. I mean, WhatsApp. I mean, they are the best emotional support that anybody can have. My students are just awesome. And it's so cool to listen to my students' messages. So they always call me or send messages like, oh, I miss you so much. What are you doing? Do you have oxygen with you? Or, you know, like, I love that connection.
Yeah. This was episode 5 of our third season of Record of Change, featuring guest Blanca Rivera in Quito, Ecuador. If you liked this episode or Record of Change in general, we would love to hear your feedback. And even more so if you would like to share it with your networks. Follow us on your favorite podcast provider or on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, or our website, recordofchange.com. If you would like supporting independent podcasts, we would be honored for you to support our efforts to bring you unique stories from across the world through being a Patreon supporter. For those supporting us on Patreon, you'll have early access to episodes and behind-the-scenes insights from the Record of Change team and the opportunity to pitch questions for our interviewees alongside us. Even the smallest level of support can be a great boost as we strive to document the impact of COVID-19 on communities throughout the world. This podcast is implemented with and by members of the Bosch Alumni Network, a community that brings together former and current fellows, grantees, and staff members of the Robert Bosch Stiftung and its partners. Thank you for listening.